We have Chad from El Cajon. How's it going, Chad?
Oh, pretty good. How are you, sir?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I guess one thing I wanted to, ask as far as a hard question.
Sure.
I have friends that are, say, not of Christian faith.
Okay.
And, you know, one in particular I saw yesterday afternoon, and we were having a discussion just generally about news and things in the news and all of that.
Right.
And she said something that struck me as far as dealing with people who were, say, born again or fundamentalists in a sense, and how they sometimes scared her in their views.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thoughts were, how does a Christian, not, you know, in order not to offend their friend, okay, who's of a different faith, tell them, well, listen, my faith is that if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, that you will not enter the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
You know, because their faith is completely, you know, arbitrary or against that
right.
belief. And I'm always concerned about offending my friend by coming across and saying something like that.
Right.
You know? And so I don't know how to handle that. You know, I've thought about it, and usually, you know, I don't broach that subject because of, I know, in fact, it may upset her, you know,
right.
And others as well, you know, who might believe in Islam, et cetera.
Sure.
You know, you know.
Well, first of all, Chad, I appreciate the fact that you don't want to upset her. It shows you're a person of integrity, and you're not here to bulldoze people into your
right.
point of view.
Right.
I also feel that as Christians, we can take a little bit of the pressure off of ourselves. And believe me, I'm saying this as somebody who learned that the hard way. I used to just feel like I was sinning against God if I didn't bring up the gospel with everybody.
Right.
I thought I was the last roadblock to hell, and I had all the tack of a lawnmower in a barber shop. And I finally had to realize, if they didn't hear the gospel from me, they'll hear it from somebody else. And if they're not interested, they're not really going to listen
right.
anyway. It is true that some people have a gift called the gift of evangelism and are called into some ministries where they might do some high-profile things. But as far as the charge that's given to everybody, interestingly enough, in Peter, where he talks about evangelism, he says, let everybody give an answer to anyone who asks you to account for the reason for your hope. And he's assuming that people might someday ask you. So if she says, hey, why do you believe this stupid Christian stuff? Or she asks you a question or is showing some interest, respond to her interest. And if at any time in the conversation she says, wait a minute, I don't want to talk about it anymore, then you
right.
just say that's fine.
Right.
And so I think that would take all the pressure off of you,
right.
all the pressure off of her. Now, if you're into the conversation, though, and she's having a problem with the idea of a God who would send somebody to hell, let me say something very radical here, but I'm prepared to back it up.
Okay.
The Bible tells us that God has given everybody a conscience.
Right.
And I believe that in the conscience, all the laws of the Bible are written, because actually, according to Jesus, there's really only one law of God. It's what we constantly call the golden rule, is you would have people treat you, treat them. Everybody believes in that rule.
Right.
I've debated atheists who go on and on about, hey, we're people of high conscience. And I say, I don't doubt that. I don't question that. I'm not saying you're not a person of high conscience. Now, this means that God's nature is reflected in our conscience. And by looking at our societies, we can see for ourselves how we believe in things. Do we see any evidence in our society that we believe in something like a hell? Well, I think as an attorney or anybody involved in the law profession, an attorney or a police officer, we would realize that actually we do, and it's in our very court system.
Right.
I'll give you an example. I spoke to a police officer once in Santa Barbara, and he had two questions for me, and they were probably two of the biggest questions that people ask regarding Christianity.
Yeah.
One was the one that your friend would ask, how can a loving God send people to hell?
Right. Right.
The other one was, how can a loving God see all the evil in this world, sit back and not do anything about it? Some people don't realize it, but those questions actually contradict each other.
Right.
Because on one hand, they're complaining about a God who sits back passively and won't do anything about the evil.
Right.
On the other hand, they're complaining that actually the Bible says he will do something about the evil. And I said to this police officer, sir, you probably don't remember having met me before, but we actually met once before. I was coming back to my house late at night, and there was a squad car and a man arrested yelling and screaming and kicking the back seat because his wife had just called you. And she had called you because he was beating her. And I said, sir, I remember you pleading with this woman I remember saying, ma'am, would you please press charges this time? Because we've been through this again and again. Your husband beats you, you call us, we arrest him. Then your heart softens, you go down to the station, you drop the charges, we let him out. He beats you again, you call us again, we arrest him again. We let him go again. He says, we've been through this 7 times. He says, you're making my job difficult. I care about you. And I know you care about your husband, but your husband's dangerous. Your husband needs to be locked up, not because we want to be vindictive, but because if he's out roaming free, it's going to be a danger to people. And I said to him, sir, when you said that, I didn't view you as a harsh police officer. I viewed you as a very compassionate police officer. And any judge who would let a murderer or a rapist run free would be a judge that we would call irresponsible and unloving, would we not?
Right.
Well, if we have this reflected in our own human court systems, well, then what does the Bible mean when they talk about hell?
Right.
Hell is not necessarily a place where you burn. There's some imagery of that used at times. But what hell is really a place where people will live out the rest of eternity separated from God, because that's what they chose to do. The whole idea is that people are looking for paradise. From the beginning of time, people have said, if only this world was a perfect place instead of the imperfect place with this crime and war and murder. And then God comes along and says, okay, there is a place called paradise. But if I let a sinful person into paradise, it's not going to be paradise for very long. Now, here's where it gets sticky. This is pretty easy. Probably most people listening to us right now would agree that, okay, as far as the murderer goes, or an Adolf Hitler, or a Genghis Khan, that's fine.
Right, yeah.
But what's this idea about having to believe in Jesus? Well, it's not about belief. God's not going to give us a theology exam on Judgment Day and say, okay, you lost salvation, but we have lovely luggage for you. Okay, this isn't Monty Hall from Let's Make a Deal. This is God. Jesus, in a sense, is a means to an end. Jesus says, look, all of us are guilty of doing evil things. All of us have a selfish side of our day. Maybe you've never murdered somebody, but you've been so angry, you've felt like murdering. And no, you didn't do it. And that's good that you didn't do it. But if you have that same murderous, barbaric instinct inside, something needs to be done. And all of a sudden, following Jesus makes more sense.
Right.
Part of the problem here is Christians too easily talk about the solution before people are aware of a problem. We give them an answer, and they haven't even asked a question. There used to be a bumper sticker that said, Jesus is the answer. And one day another bumper sticker popped up that said, what's the question?
Right.
If a person doesn't understand that they've sinned, the idea of following Jesus means absolutely nothing to them. But to the person that looks into their heart and says, I have thoughts and motives that I'd be ashamed if other people knew about, but God knows them. This person all of a sudden says, okay, you know, I see that in my heart, and I don't have a button on my side that I can push to make that go away.
Right.
This is where a relationship with the Spirit of God comes about, because God says, I've forgiven you on the cross, and I also want to come into your heart and change it. All of a sudden, it makes more sense. Your friends who are objecting to Christianity are probably objecting very appropriately, because well-meaning, well-intentioned Christians have made the gospel sound unfair.
Right.
If it was a matter of a mere belief, it would be unfair, but it's not about belief, it's about sin. I remember a fellow said to me one time, this is when I was out on a college campus with a book table, and he wandered by and he goes, you know, I like to get high in a joint every once in a while, but I would never set up a table and tell other people that they should get high in a joint too. In other words, where did I get the nerve to tell people that what works for me, Jesus, must work for them as well or else? And I said to him, well, friend, if Jesus were just some joint to get high on, you'd be absolutely right. But let me ask you a question. If you knew the cure for cancer, would you share it with people? He said, well, of course I would. I said, well, when they come out with a cure, would you be willing to say, this is the cure? This is the actual cure. This is the only cure. If you want to get cured for cancer, this is it. He says, yeah.
Right. Amen.
I said, well, isn't that kind of closed-minded of you? I mean, maybe vitamin C is the cure for cancer. Maybe penicillin or tetracycline is the cure for cancer. See, the thing is, we close our mind all the times. But when we talk about religion, people feel the freedom to invent a whole new series of rules.
Right.
When we're talking about science, and you go through this in law, if something is a contradiction or something doesn't make sense, we jump all over that. There is such a thing as truth.
Right.
There is such a thing as making a decision. Well, I submit that when people discuss religion, they assume immediately at the beginning of the conversation that religion doesn't really have anything to do with truth anyway. It's just a comforting fantasy.
Right.
So telling somebody to choose Jesus over Buddha is like choosing the Chronicles of Narnia as opposed to the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
They're both fantasies. Just pick one.
Right.
What we need to do is challenge that assumption, because the leaders of these different religions didn't claim to have a comforting fantasy. They claimed to have truth that came from God.
Right.
And yet the religions completely contradict themselves. So I think we can make this make more sense to people than we have been. And I'm doing this as one who's done it tactlessly and who's fallen flat on his face. So believe me, it's something I've had to learn the hard way.
Okay. Well, hopefully I can at least not offend her the next time the conversation comes up.
You know, if you've been her friend, you've earned the right to be heard. And if she knows, if you can sit her down, even if you have a difficult conversation,
right,
and say, look, I want you to know, I'm always going to be your friend.
Right.
You could become a Christian, you could not become a Christian. I'm always going to be your friend. It's between you and God. And you ask me, so I'll tell you. If she knows that, she's going to be okay. You know, she may whine here and there, because sometimes people hear things in the gospel they don't want to hear. And it is an offensive message in that it is asking people to change, and change doesn't come easily.
Right.
But I really appreciate the fact that you don't want to take this message that's already offensive and make it more offensive,
right,
by doing it in an abrasive and tactless way. And I don't have the slightest doubt that you're going to do that. So I think you'll be fine. Just let her bring it up. And if she doesn't bring it up, don't feel the need.
Okay.
That's
Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye.